Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thanks for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, where it's fair and 45. Out at the airport, they have wind speeds from the southwest at 3 miles per hour. We are looking for increasing clouds today with a high near 52. Calm winds. Rain's expected tonight, mainly after 10 p.m., a low of about 40 overnight with southeast winds to 15, turning to the east after midnight and gusting as high as 25. For tomorrow, rain before 10 a.m., cloudy skies tomorrow, high near 51, and north winds to 20. Mostly cloudy skies overnight on Tuesday with an overnight low of 40, and sunny skies on Wednesday. Coming up on the Midday Report, Alaska is number one in COVID-19 case rates. The National Science Foundation and the University of Alaska's research vessel has wrapped up a marine geology expedition. And sad news about Alaska's state balladeer, Hobo Jim.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. After years of legal wrangling and a month-long trial, R&B artist R. Kelly's been found guilty on all counts in his sex trafficking trial in New York City. Today, a federal jury convicted Kelly of a total of 9 counts, including sexual exploitation of a child, bribery, kidnapping, racketeering, and sex trafficking. At sentencing, Kelly faces 10 years to life in prison. The number of murders in the United States increased by nearly 30% in 2020 compared to the previous year. NPR's Ryan Lucas reports that is according to new data out from the FBI.
The statistics published by the FBI show there were more than 21,500 murders last year. That's nearly 5,000 more than in 2019, and it marks the largest single-year increase in the U.S. in decades. Overall, the violent crime rate, which includes murder and assault and other offenses, was up 5% last year. Property crimes, however, were down. As troubling as the figures for 2020 are, the violent crime rate is still significantly lower than it was two decades ago. The same holds true for property crime. The question is why 2020 saw such a spike in homicides. Researchers say a range of factors contribute to annual fluctuations in crime, but the turmoil of 2020, including the pandemic and its ripple effects, likely played a role. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
The Drug Enforcement Administration is warning that a growing number of fake pain pills now sold illegally in the United States are contaminated with deadly chemicals. NPR's Brian Mann reports federal officials say seizures of counterfeit pills have spiked more than fourfold in the last 2 years.
Many of the most widely used medications, like OxyContin and Percocet, can be purchased on the black market by people struggling with addiction. Many of those pills are counterfeit, often made by drug cartels based in Mexico. According to the DEA, a huge percentage of the fake pills are now laced with deadly quantities of the synthetic opioid fentanyl, or with methamphetamines. Nearly half the pills tested contained potentially lethal doses of fentanyl. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, overdose deaths have spiked nearly 100,000 fatalities a year. This public health alert does not apply to legally purchased medications. Brian Mann, NPR News.
40 years after John Hinckley Jr. tried to assassinate then-President Ronald Reagan, a judge is granting his unconditional release. Starting next June, Hinckley will no longer be required to be under some form of supervision, provided he remains mentally stable. However, Hinckley is barred from having a gun. The 66-year-old was 25 when he shot and wounded Reagan and 3 others. He paralyzed White House Press Secretary James Brady, the inspiration of the pivotal gun control bill named for him. The Dow is up 71 points before the close. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Alaska's COVID-19 case rate remains tops in the nation, and according to Anchorage-based economist and pandemic data analyst Jonathan King, it's also among the highest worldwide.
If Alaska were its own country as of Thursday of last week, we would have been the third worst country in the world for current COVID outbreaks behind Grenada and Bermuda.
In the U.S., King says Alaska and most other states with high case rates have some things in common.
Relatively low vaccination rates and conservative Republican governors that don't want to institute public health measures.
Meanwhile, Alaska has one of the lowest COVID death rates in the country, a statistic King expects to change as hospitals struggle with capacity.
I would expect the death rates to go up. I don't think that we're going to maintain our number three position. We're going to start sliding down the scale.
King emphasizes that the current Delta variant spike will trend down as more people develop immunity through either immunization or illness. But he says the longer it takes, the more chance there is for a new COVID variant to emerge.
We have a hand in reducing that number of chances that the virus gets by reducing the number of cases.
King, who is also an internationally credentialed leadership coach, emphasizes that there's psychology at play in the battle against COVID. He says the mental toll of the pandemic can work against measures to slow it.
You know, I don't want to get vaccinated. I don't want to wear a mask. You know, it's some of that is just frankly, it's an expression to exhibit control because they don't have control over this. So one of the ways that they can exhibit control is just saying, I'm not going to comply.
Noting the new federal employer mandate, King says offering employees the choice of either vaccination or weekly testing could help diffuse resistance. Alaska's state balladeer announced last week he's been diagnosed with end-stage cancer. James Varsos, better known to Alaska and the world as Hobo Jim, says his cancer is untreatable and that doctors told him he has between 3 and 6 months to live. Barzo spoke to KDLL Sabine Pooks about his career in Alaska, and he says he's overwhelmed with gratitude for the support he's received from his Alaskan friends and fans.
The Soldotna singer is currently down in Tennessee with his wife, Cindy. On Friday, he said he was doing all right.
I'm in a bit of pain, but outside of that, you know, I have a good attitude, and it's a pretty day here, too.
Varsos lives in Soldotna, but before he came to Alaska, he was known to rove, hitchhiking all across the U.S., riding freight trains, and singing folk songs. When he came to Homer in 1972, he put down roots.
I knew when I crossed the Baycrest Hill that Alaska was home.
Varsos later moved to Soldotna. He's always loved to fish the Kenai and at one time was getting sponsored by local companies to take boats out on the river.
I'm addicted to fishing. As soon as I get out of this pain, that's the first thing I'm going to do is go fishing for the rest of my life.
For 25 years, he sung out of BJ's Lounge in Soldotna until the bar closed. More recently, he was playing weekly shows at AJ's Old Town Steakhouse in Homer. He built up a strong fan following on the peninsula and around the state, always performing with his guitar and iconic cowboy hat. Many of Varsos' songs are love letters to Alaska, from I Am Alaska to the famous Iditarod Trail song. In 1994, the Alaska State Legislature named him Alaska's balladeer.
Well, give me a team and a good lead dog and a sled that's built so fine. And let me race those miles to Nome 1049. Then when I get back to my home, hey, I can tell my tale. I did the Iditarod Trail.
Varsos performed at the Alaska State Fair last month, which is where he first noticed the pain from the cancer. He was later hospitalized in Tennessee, where he and Cindy have a second home. They took that home during Alaska's oil crash, Varsos said, when the bars closed and there weren't as many opportunities to perform live locally. He took a job writing commercial country music in Tennessee, where he says he would write 5 to 6 songs any week. He and Cindy are in Tennessee now. Next month is the anniversary of when they first met.
We got married in May, but we met on Halloween weekend 42 years ago. So
their only son died this spring. Even though this last year has been marked by tragedy for the family, Farso said in a Facebook post this weekend, he's had a blessed life.
I'd love to tell people, especially people of the Kenai Peninsula and O Soldana, that, you know, I love each and every one of you, and I appreciate that this is my 49th year of playing in the 49th state. If it was going to happen, it couldn't have come better. And I really appreciate each and every one of you. Thanks for all the love.
There are over 2,000 comments from friends and fans on his post, wishing him well and reminiscing about his talent and friendship. Some of the messages come from fans in Germany, where he has a fan club of several hundred listeners. He says they're fascinated by his tales of Alaska, and he performs there every year. Several friends also started a GoFundMe to help Varsos and his wife. As of Friday, almost 200 donors had raised over $35,000.
I have read almost everything, and it's been overwhelming, and it's been so warm and so touching. And to everybody out there that sent me a message, I try to read them all. There's no way I could answer them all, but they really lift my heart very, very much.
Well, Varso says he's not sure what these next couple months will bring. He says he hopes to come back to Alaska and, of course, do some fishing. For KDLL, I'm Sabine Poops.
I am the one who's come with a harpoon and a drum. Over frozen trails I traveled to a land of midnight sun. I'm a howling husky teen. I'm every miner's dream, laying golden in the stream. I am Alaska.
A former fisheries lobbyist stands accused of fishing over the line for the second time in 2 years. He continues to fight the original 2019 charges in court and says the new ones are also flawed. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, he's getting some help and advice from a friend and top fisheries advisor and former official.
Robert Thorstensen, who goes by Bobby, was among a group of seiners sighted earlier this month during a 12-hour opener in Sitka's Silver Bay. The commercial fishermen were targeting chum released by the local hatchery in a special harvest area that he says was unfamiliar to the group.
It was a big, weird-shaped triangle, you know, that I've never seen before, that we've never fished before.
The hatchery had forecast as many as 90,000 chum salmon in the area, but fishing game biologists drew lines to keep gear away from freshwater streams where wild salmon would be headed to spawn.
You know, the last thing I wanted was a ticket, so I called the trooper over to me and I asked him where I could legally fish, and he told me where I could legally fish, so I went over there and sat there, and then he came over and wrote me a ticket.
Neither Fish and Game nor Alaska Wildlife Troopers would comment on specifics, citing the open court case, but the Department of Public Safety said in a statement it's the responsibility of the permit holder and vessel captain to follow all rules and regulations. Court documents show that law enforcement officials confiscated 5,170 pounds of chum salmon. Until 2018, Thorstensen was one of the state's preeminent lobbyists in the commercial fisheries world. He's also a former executive director of the Southeast Alaska Seiners Association and was part of the state's delegation to help negotiate the Pacific Salmon Treaty. The charges are similar to Thorstensen's 2019 incident at Crawfish Inlet, also on the west side of Baranof Island. There, he was accused of fishing for hatchery-released chum too close to a freshwater salmon stream. He says the terminal harvest area set up to catch hatchery-released fish are purposefully separated from where wild stocks are strong.
If there was any wild salmon stocks that were even meaningful enough to make a freaking sandwich out of, we wouldn't let them put a hatchery there.
And he disputes that the Crawfish Inlet stream had wild fish in it.
It's not an inanimate stream. It's a mountain stream. It's never had a fish in it.
That point was backed up by a former Fish and Game deputy commissioner who visited the area with Thorstensen about a week later.
And of course, you know, Bobby at that point in time was, you know, he was pretty, I guess you could say, you know, upset about the whole thing.
That's Charlie Swanton, who had retired from the agency at the end of 2018 after nearly 40 years in state government. He says he hiked the stream as far as some downed trees and boulders.
I mean, I looked around. There was not a sign of, actually, to tell you the truth, I didn't find a single fish of any species in that stream.
He'd been invited by Thorstensen to fish with him now that he was retired after decades of working on the regulatory side of things. He says while the two were standing in the unnamed stream, unable to find any fish.
And all of a sudden, Bobby turns around and he goes, well, I think I just found my expert witness. And so I wasn't looking to do it, but But I mean, he's a friend, you know, he's somebody that was an advisor for a number of years for me with the Pacific Salmon Treaty. And, you know, although he's a unique guy, I found it, you know, just like, well, I know a little something about this stuff. I could help you out. And so that's how I got involved with it.
That involvement included a dozen-page affidavit he filed with the court, calling into question the agency's rationale for designating it a salmon-producing stream. While it doesn't ask for Thorstensen's charges to be dismissed, it recommends the court take these factors into consideration. Prosecutors have already downgraded the 2019 misdemeanor to a violation, basically an infraction, and half the roughly $50,000 value of the catch seized has been returned by authorities to allow Thorstensen to apply for more grant funding. So why is he fighting this ticket?
It's just violations, sure, but it's still a violation.
The first case is scheduled to go to trial in December. The second ticket likely won't be heard until next year. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
The National Science Foundation owned and University of Alaska Fairbanks operated research vessel Sikuliak is wrapping up a marine geology expedition this week. The nearly two-month-long journey took the ice-capable ship over 500 miles north of Upyavik, the farthest north it's ever been.
Where we were up in the northern Chukchi, we were breaking new ground.
That's UAF Geophysical Institute Professor Bernard Coakley speaking from the Sikuliak via satellite phone. Coakley and colleagues have used an array of technology to survey the ocean floor of the Canada Basin and adjacent Chukchi borderlands. Coakley lists features observed, including channels in the sea bottom.
Where the gouges are parallel, we call them megascale glacial lineations, and they're evidence that a continental glacier once scraped across.
Coakley says other features like random plow marks made by icebergs and piles of sediment created by now inactive faults together can help us better understand the ocean area's formation.
I like to say we've been working backwards in the Arctic, where we stand on the edges, make our observations, and then we say, well, therefore the ocean is this. But I think the real answer to the question of how the ocean formed is to be found by looking at the features.
Coakley says it also provides insight into how the continents formed and changed over time.
And, you know, if you want to understand northern Alaska or the development of Alaska in total, understanding how the Arctic Ocean fits into that picture is very important. But I think the real answer to the question of how the ocean formed is to be found by looking at the features.
Coakley says it has practical implications for things like mineral exploration and defining the extent of U.S. territory in the Arctic, but there's also a purely intellectual pursuit.
You know, we want to know. We want to understand. That's what drives me.
Coakley and fellow UAF researchers are scheduled to disembark from the Sikuliak in Nome and be back in Fairbanks this week. The Napakiak School sits on the edge of the community's eroding riverbank. The Lower Kuskokwim School District has received state funds to demolish it. Governor Mike Dunleavy signed the state budget bill into law last week that includes $3.1 million for the project. KYUK's Greg Kim reports on what could happen next with the building.
Napakiak's principal says the school is within 30 feet of the Kuskokwim River during high tide. The building needs to be removed soon to avoid it falling into the river. But despite receiving funding to do so, LKSD won't be demolishing the building right away.
We need to move through a process of, one, determining which route we're going to take and then putting together the demo package and going out to bid for that. So that takes time.
LKSD Superintendent Kimberly Hankin spoke with KYUK in early September before the funding for the Napakiak School had been fully approved. She said the district is planning on taking down at least part of the school sometime this year. But before that, the district will consult with engineers to decide how much of the school to demolish.
If we did a complete demolition, then we would need more portable classroom space. But we are looking at the idea of a partial demolition and then continuing to access a portion of the existing building. But I won't know much more on that until we actually get feedback from the architect and engineers.
Whatever amount of the school is demolished, at least some, maybe all of the students in Napakiak will be in portable classrooms soon. The high schoolers have already evacuated from the main school into an unused building next door because their classroom was closest to the river. They will stay in those makeshift classrooms until a replacement school is built. The state has not yet funded a new school, which is estimated to cost over $40 million. However, Superintendent Hankins says that the state approving funding for demolition at least means the legislature is aware of the situation in Napaquiac.
I feel more optimistic than ever that we're heading in the right direction.
As of now, Napaquiac is fourth on the state's priority list for new school buildings. The state did not allocate any money for new school construction projects in this year's budget. In Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
The waters near Dutch Harbor were host to some special guests last week. According to the Coast Guard press release from Saturday, the Japanese Military Special Defense Force training vessel Kashima conducted a joint exercise with the Coast Guard cutter Kimball. The two crews performed a uniformed salute at sea as part of a ceremony rendering honors to the Japanese crew. During the two-month journey of the Japanese ship from Hiroshima to Alaska to the Arctic to Pearl Harbor, then back to Japan, they trained in search and rescue missions and maneuvers, as well as exercises with the U.S. and Japanese Coast Guard. The Kashima is used to train new Japanese officers and bore 110 newly commissioned officers with a total of 300 crew members for the journey.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Sea cucumbers can claim medical miracles. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute provides digital and print marketing materials to the Alaska seafood industry. Find thousands of stunning photos, video footage, and sales tools at alaskaseafood.org.
We've all heard the saying, don't judge a book by its cover. In this case, don't mistake a sea cucumber for just a slimy sea slug. Along with being considered a delicacy in Asian cuisines for centuries, sea cukes have been used in traditional medicines to help aid in a wide variety of health problems, including cancer. Author Ty Bollinger talks about sea cucumber being a miracle cancer cure in his book, Cancer, Step Outside the Box.
You can cook it up, but the way that you'll find it in your local health food store, they'll dry it and powder it up, and they'll put it in little capsules.
Dried sea cucumber or extracts are antiviral, antibacterial, and also anti-inflammatory.
Very high in chondroitin sulfate, which you're familiar with to treat joint pain and arthritis. To my knowledge, has the highest concentration of chondroitin of any animal.
You'll most likely find sea cucumber derivatives to help with joints, Bollinger says, but at the same time, you can take it for the treatment of cancer.
Won't say that it treats cancer, it hadn't been approved, but it will say that it helps joint pain. So that's what you'll see on the label.
Sea cucumbers' healing effects on cancer are the most exciting.
It's used as an adjunct to a lot of people that are undergoing chemotherapy because it's very effective at mitigating the side effects of chemotherapy because it's been shown to be immunomodulatory.
Researchers have been studying the effects of sea cucumbers on cancer cells for more than 20 years. Bollinger says it can attack cancer in many ways.
Number one is it's cytotoxic, which means that it kills cancer cells. It's also immunomodulatory, so it's got both sides of the cancer equation that I like to put it, the cancer-killing coin. If you're going to defeat cancer, you have to have something that upregulates or downregulates your immune system to where it works properly so that your body can do what it's supposed to do, but you have to also have something that's going to kill those cancer cells. The sea cucumber does both.
Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
KMXT is awaiting a new announcement from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game here in Kodiak. To hear the most recent announcement regarding openings and closures around Kodiak, call 486-4559.
If you are a renter who's struggling financially due to COVID-19,
Alaska Housing Rent Relief may be able to pay your rent and utility bills for up to 3 months, even if they are past due. The deadline to apply is October 1st. To see if someone you know qualifies for federal emergency rental assistance, visit alaskahousingrelief.org or call 1-844-330-8290 toll-free. That's alaskahousingrelief.org.
Welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 27th day of September, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 8.06 a.m. It will set again at 7.53. That will give us 11 hours and 47 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. The record low for this date was 26, and the record high was 62. The record high was set in 1993, and the record low in 1992. Looking at our local tides, we just had a low tide here on the east side at 11:53 a.m. That was a 3.5-foot tide. Our next high tide will be at 6:09 p.m., a 7.9-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 1:07 a.m. of 1.7 feet, and our high tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will happen at 7:42 a.m. and be 5.5 feet. Over on the west side, you will have a low tide at 12:20 p.m. Oh no, you just did 5 minutes ago, 12:20, 4.9 foot tide. Your next high tide will be at 6:36 p.m. and be 12 feet, followed by a low tide at 1:26 a.m. of 2.4 feet. And your high tide in Larsen Bay tomorrow morning will be at 7:52 a.m. and be 9.2 feet. Mariners, we do have a small craft advisory tonight and Tuesday from Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. West 20 right now and seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, look for northeast 25, seas to 11 feet. Over in the Shelikof, small craft advisory tonight and Tuesday. Southwest 15 in the Shelikof, seas to 4 feet right now. For tonight, northeast 30, seas to 9 feet. And for tomorrow, northeast continuing at 30, seas to 10 feet. Extension kitchen classes, winter is coming. Food preservation workshops for fall of 2021 are happening. The extension kitchen classes are taught by UAF Cooperative Extension Agent Sarah Lewis from her home kitchen in Juneau to your home kitchen anywhere. Sarah will offer an online resource site where participants can find publications and information for each class. But the real fun will happen at the Zoom. You can join Sarah on Zoom to watch or cook along, or you can watch the video of the class at your own pace. Sarah will lead the classes by Zoom on Tuesdays, 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m., starting October 5th. Participants may register for one or all classes, which cost $10 each. For more information, contact Sarah Lewis, Southeast Alaska Extension Agent, at 907-523-3280. The Kodiak City Council and Borough Assembly are holding a joint work session Wednesday. The meeting will begin at 6:30 p.m. Public participation for this meeting is in person and virtual. Elected officials may be participating via audio-video conferencing. Public members are encouraged to tune in right here to KMXT on 100.1 FM at 6:30. The meeting will also be web streamed, and the web streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you have any information or need physical materials, call the clerk at 486-8636.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.